Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And that debt is fraud. Please learn, pray, and act. That's what we need to do. We all need to do that. We all need to learn, get more informed so we can get involved. But let's pray so that we can do the right things, and let's start acting upon what we've learned. Now, I haven't mentioned this probably in a little while, but if you are looking for good quality furniture, please consider Timber Nation for Christmas or for that enhancement, that new desk. As a matter of fact, if you haven't seen the broadcast desk that they made for me, I mean, it's very sharp looking and solid wood, folks. Anyway, go check them out. And we've got Tammy back with us. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
We were covering last week, because we only had one day, the Kentucky resolutions of 1799. I want to get this straight, because I find myself constantly saying the wrong state, wrong year, what have you, because there's these three, and we're trying to cover them all at once, and so it's easy to kind of, you know, jumble them up. So forgive me, folks, if I misstate the resolution or the year or what have you, or the state, I should say, and the year. But anyway, we were in the middle of Resolution 4, where we didn't actually get through that. I want to kind of finish. I want to focus because I wander too much going down rat holes. I know it. It's a problem. And so what we want to do, because, well, actually, it's okay, though, if you ask questions and you still don't understand, that the whole point is helping you understand. Because if Tammy gets this, then we're going to save America. Isn't that right?
Let's hope I can at least help.
You know, that was Madison's prayer. I'll never think, you know, when I hear those types of things, you know, I hope I can help. I hope I can do something. I always think of that story or the biography and reading about Madison. Here's a man that had, you know, these physical disabilities. He wasn't a big man. He was a very short. I think he was like 5'5". He was a small man. And look at what a giant he was in our history. And he prayed in his young days as he was coming back from Princeton, suffering from the bilge. If you don't understand the digestive problem of that, look it up. But he suffered from that, and it was basically, you know, always it was always a disability for him. And so he was basically praying. He goes, Lord, you know, we're going into a revolution, and you know, I'm a countryman. I'm a patriot. You know, I stand for liberty. I wish I could at least contribute somehow. Please, you know, please allow me to contribute somehow. And look what he did.
Yeah.
He lived a full life. He didn't even think he would live a full life. He lived a full life. He lived into his 80s. And, you know, he became the president. He was the only president ever to don, you know, to actually muster troops in war as the United States president, only U.S. president to actually take troops into battle. The smallest guy, the guy. Anyway.
That is pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. So let's get back to where we were, because that's what I need to focus on, covering the content, or we'll never get to the Organic Act and all of those other things. So let's reread, starting off with the red highlights, because you just read part of that. So let's start that off over again. This is where Jefferson is basically giving the ultimate response, or I should say, Kentucky's final position on all of this. Go ahead.
That the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right to judge of its infraction. and that a nullification by those sovereignties of all unauthorized acts done under color of that instrument is the rightful remedy.
Okay, so clearly it's unquestionable who has the right to judge. It is the states. They are the sovereigns. They're the parents. It is their right to judge every infraction, even the slightest infraction. And they have the power to nullify, by, you know, so he says, and that a nullification by those sovereignties. So, and this is what took us down the rat hole in our last show where we were working and talking together. So I went down this rat hole of Republic Review, the directives and so forth, that the states would literally tell Congress what they have to do. We do not need, remember, this goes back to even further back to the Federalist Papers number 49, where Jefferson, in his notes on the Virginia Constitution, notes on the Virginia of 1783, he talks about two types of conventions. He talks about a convention of creating a constitution and or changing itself. You know, there's the working and the molding of the Constitution, creating it or making changes to it. Then he talks about a different and unique constitution of dealing with the breaches thereof. And this is the when we look at Republic Review, you don't have to send delegates into, you know, into a secret little building because they're going to go off and work on writing or amending. This is literally in open when we create this convention of states. When I say convention of states, that means it's an online group meeting of the state legislatures where they're literally, you know, voting in their on their own. Because if you just imagine, we have the technology to do this. It's so amazing. But if you actually imagine having two browsers or two applications, maybe Zoom and free conference call, where in one, the state is actually communicating, they're voting or they're conducting their votes on how they're going to, you know, do we want this to be done, that to be done? Because all of this stuff has to get kind of done. If you look at Republic Review, there'll be a small committee that will basically put out, this has got to go, this has got to go, this has got to go. Anything that is found within the powers, those things stay. And so everything that goes, it'll go in front of the states, and these states, they will rubber stamp, but in that rubber stamping, it will create, it's a lot more than just that, it'll create these directives. So anyway, as he's laying out this, that they have this power to make those judges, to determine the rightful remedy, right? And we talked about under the color of that instrument. In other words, not under the real legitimacy, but an illegitimate using that instrument like it was legitimate. And so we'll actually use with Republic Review, we will actually use the state legislatures collectively all at once. They'll all be voting and they'll determine this has got to go, this is going to go, this is, and they will be actually already pre-queued in admitting and on board with what is unconstitutional. See, folks, people think that, oh, you know, the Department of Transportation, there may be people that think, well, that's okay. We like that. We want you to do that. The ultimate answer for the states is it's got to go. You got to give us an amendment. It's got to go. You have to give us an amendment. First, before you give us the amendment, you have to get rid of, and in other words, the process of Republic Review has to highlight everything that's got to go, and, you know, these directives have to be done. So in other words, this is the hope that if the people really want to give the federal government the ability, if the state legislatures really want them to have the Department of Transportation, the few of these powers, then they will basically say, okay, once we're all done with this, you want to, you know, take 6 months or what have you, because it shouldn't take long to go through all of this. Now, the monstrosity of the federal government is pretty big, but they should be able to actually go through this very quickly. And then in each of the directives, it will lay out the sunset. In other words, this department will be completely shut down by this day. You know, 6 months, a year, depending on the magnitude and the importance of that. Like the Department of Energy, we may want to wait a year or something like that because a lot of that data is important. But nevertheless, we'll have everything must be sunsetted. In other words, everything must be identified to go because it is an infraction. It doesn't matter if a state goes, oh, no, no, we like that. It doesn't matter. You've got to prove that that's within the enumerated objects. If it's not, it's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as we've laid that all out, these things are all not enumerated. They all got to go, and they're all scheduled to go. And this is the beauty about having these sunsetted. If all of a sudden the states in this process say, but we're going to let you keep this. So start Congress. You start working on an amendment so that we can consider that when we're all done here. We will not consider the amendments until we're done telling you all the stuff that you've got to get rid of.
So right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then Congress will work on trying to provide a good amendment for the Department of Transportation. Right? Or federal communications. Anything that the states really say, you know what? We're better off letting them continue. Because actually, the federal government's only proven that we can't trust them with these things. Because they use these things against us. They've been weaponizing and committing warfare, or actually executing warfare against us. So anyway, I digress. So the point is that the states, only the states, have the right to judge, you know, of those infractions, what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. Because in this particular case, these were only laws. They're not talking about a department that was created because of these laws. This is how far out of the breaches the government has gotten. They've created their own enforcement agencies and all these things, like the FBI. So this is where we got to get the parents back in the room. It's not we have a king to make these decisions. We, the people, and our state governments have to actually be directing all of this and determine what to do, that rightful remedy. So from there, go ahead and take up that next line.
That this Commonwealth does upon the most deliberate reconsideration declare that the said Alien and Sedition Acts are, in their opinion, palpable violations of the said Constitution.
Okay. So, there they are, that they're declaring that those acts... So, did he just go, well, we'll accept what you said? Not. As a matter of fact, he's moving forward to say, we're moving forward, even though we can't do anything about it. We are still going to declare that the said Alien and Sedition Acts are palpable violations of that said Constitution. Go ahead.
And, however, cheerfully it may be disposed to surrender its opinion to a majority of its sister states in matters of ordinary or doubtful policy.
Okay, so, in other words, we may, you know, cheerfully dispose to surrender our opinion because the majority of the sister states disagree with us. Go ahead.
Yet in momentous regulations like the present, which so vitally with the best rights of the citizen.
No, which so vitally wound. Okay.
Which so vitally wound the best rights of the citizen, it would consider a silent acquiescence as highly criminal.
Wow. So he says, even though, you know, we could be silent and not say anything and not make that declaration that they are palpable violations of the Constitution, if we did that, you know, regarding these momentous unconstitutional laws or momentous regulations, as we're talking about in the present, that basically the violating the best rights of the citizens, then we would be criminal. This would be highly criminal of us and our responsibility of actually trying to stop this. Go ahead.
That although this Commonwealth, as a party to the federal compact, will bow to the laws of the Union, yet it does at the same time declare that it will not now nor ever hereafter cease to oppose in a constitutional manner every attempt from what quarter soever offered to violate that compact.
Okay, So, in other words, he's basically saying that this Commonwealth, even though we are a party to that compact, we will allow us to be governed by those unconstitutional laws, but at the same time, declare now and for hereafter, we will never cease to oppose in a constitutional manner every attempt from what quarter soever offered when anybody wants to violate that compact, state or federal government. In other words, we're going to be faithfully watching and faithfully standing up to the federal government or other states when they violate that constitution. In other words, we're here now. It's not that we can't nullify and walk away. We're not going to walk away because of this. But we're telling you these are violations, and we're heading down a very dangerous path. Okay. So then he kind of creates this finality, right? So in the fifth resolution, and finally, go ahead.
And finally, in order that no pretext or arguments may be drawn from a supposed acquiescence on the part of this Commonwealth in the constitutionality of those laws, and be hereby used as precedents for similar future violations of federal compact, this Commonwealth does now enter against them its solemn protest.
Okay, so even though they're going down this path of allowing the federal government to try to execute these laws, here's the problem. If the federal government needed to execute those laws in the states, in other words, needed to round people up, how would they do this? Thinking at the time, they didn't have the IRS, they didn't have the ATF, they didn't have INS? You know, they didn't have the Border Patrol. They didn't have these enforcement agencies. So how is it? How, you know, moving forward, how would Kentucky deal with in this protest? Would you expect that Kentucky would allow the federal government to come in to exercise? In other words, they would have to bring the militia in to execute those laws, because basically, if you're protesting, you're going to have to actually bring the militia in to do it, because we're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not leaving the Union, but we're not going to use our forces to actually enforce these. In other words, I'm protesting. Have you ever had a child protest? You know,
oh, sure.
Like breakfast. I'm protesting breakfast.
Never.
Can you make that child eat?
No.
No, you can't. And so when you're in protest, you're basically saying, you know, you're going to have to pick me up, put those clothes on me, and put me in the car and take me to grandma's. Because I'm not going. I'm protesting to go to grandma's because I wanted to be with my friends today or what have you. See, I mean, children protest all the time. And in this particular case, this spouse or this parent in this union has said, we're protesting to this. There are ways that they would not have to necessarily follow, but they do not have to execute those laws if they're there. Here's another thing. If the federal government comes along and they basically say, we're now taking this land from you, or we're going to start selling this land, foreign nations are going to be coming in to occupy this land that they've purchased. The states actually have the ability to maintain their sovereignty. And if necessary, they would have to actually secede from the Union to say that we secede from the Union because this is our property. This is our land. You had no right to do that. But when it comes to the federal government and trying to obtain more land, because people look at the courts, people would look at the courts and say, you've got to adjudicate this in the court. This is where the state would then have to, and this is where I believe, keep in mind that the state has its own court. The state would basically make a ruling over this issue, this matter, that is not within the federal jurisdiction of the federal court. Now what? So the state comes along and says, we're not going to abide by you taking this land for energy purposes or for environmental purposes, for whatever purpose unconstitutional that you choose. We're not going to allow this. Then the federal government tries to drag you into the federal court. What do you do? How do you protest that? Any ideas? It's pretty simple.
Petitions?
No. Well, absolutely. But actually, there's a simple process. You have to prove to me, federal court, federal government, that you actually have jurisdiction over this matter. You don't have to go into court with them. If they don't have jurisdiction, there's no reason you should be going into their court. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes. So if they say, well, we do have jurisdiction, you go, okay, well, your jurisdiction is based on all things arising under this Constitution. Show me in this Constitution where you have the authority over the environment. Because this environment grab, this land grab, under these EPA regulations, show me that you actually have the authority to take our land.
Yeah.
This is how the state should be pushing back on the possession of land. Does that make sense? Because bottom line, ultimately, this has been a facade. They've basically been taking. I mean, it's one thing to try to create a criminal law and try to enforce that, because bottom line, they're not to have these enforcement agencies. It's just like saying, you know what? You've got the ATF sitting here. You got the ATF in our state, and you need to get the ATF out of there. We're not going to allow you to, you know, occupy these and run these things anymore. And they say, well, yeah, we're going to drag you into court. You have to do this. No, actually, you don't have jurisdiction. You have to prove to us that you actually have the authority to drag us into your court. See my point?
Yeah.
If you actually had, so this is one of the key things, that you not only have to have your state legislature, you also have to get your state, as a part of this whole process of taking control of your state, you actually have to take control of your courts as well. Because your courts are being ran by this National Bar Association and this assumed power that they, you know, they rule over all things and they create laws and all of that. So as we look, this is why it is so important that the states, because one state that tries to resist the federal tyranny will be crushed, because the others, unless the other states around them, and I truly see that that's what will happen. This is almost like that halftime talk where the coach and the team goes into the locker room and the coach basically says, look, we're getting crushed here. You know, and they don't have the talent or anything else. We're letting them do this to us. All we need to do is stand up. And then the coach, you know, the coach says that, and one person gets up and says, he's right. All we've got to do is take a stand. The next person that stands up and the next person, if the team actually says we just have to take the stand, and they actually do that, they go out and win. And just look at each player on the team is a person or a member of the union. The team is the union. You only need to have a majority of that team to basically win the game. Because when you're talking about the democratic process, each state has one vote. And if you have a majority of the states, because why do each state have one vote? Because all states are equal. Doesn't matter how many people you have. Doesn't matter how big you are. Alaska, you may have all these resources. You may have the most amount of land. You only get one vote. Texas, a lot of people, a lot of land, a lot of things. One vote. California, one vote. Rhode Island, one vote. So when we actually have a bunch of states, then the majority, when we have 50 states and the majority of them, 28, 29, 30, say, no more. We're not doing this anymore. Then you now have all the power necessary to force the federal government into compliance. Because remember, they are your representatives. And when you're obtaining, when you're getting to this point, you're actually in the elections, as far as your Republicans or those constitutional lovers, in those little bastions of, you know, degeneracy, they may not be changing out, but you will have a majority of your people. We'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. You know, when we look at the simplicity of all of this, when it comes down to what is the truth, you can't manufacture a lie into truth. You can't create something that doesn't exist into existing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go down this path of changing the form of wood into ash and smoke. In other words, matter can change its form, but you can't make ash and smoke wood. You'd actually have to have a new tree create that. When it comes to living things like that, and the Constitution being a hard, fixed document, not a living thing, you can't make matter actually appear in that. You can't make those powers actually, whoa, look at that. The CDC, that's within the Constitution right there. It's not there. Nobody has that kind of magic. Nobody has that absolute gift of that kind of power or magic, I should say. So anyway, as we were in break, I was thinking, there's a really powerful movie, and Denzel Washington played the part of Stephen Bantu Biko. And this is South Africa. You've probably never seen this movie, Cry of Freedom. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I would recommend everybody watch that movie. Stephen Bantu Biko actually stands up, and he's creating this movement of truth and liberty. You know, this, and it's all based on the American concepts of liberty. You know, that all people were created equal, that all people have inalienable rights and so forth. And so when he stands up against the apartheid in South Africa, of course, Stephen Bantu Biko's black, standing up against the apartheid. These men in office, the men of power, recognized that he was the most dangerous threat to their government at that point in time. In other words, his voice and the argument he was making, they could not silence.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was speaking on irrefutable truths. And that's where we are with this whole process of these resolutions. Madison and Jefferson were speaking on irrefutable truths. So they went down this path of solemn protest, right? That was Kentucky's final thing. We are now protesting, moving forward. Now, do you have the Virginia resolutions, or I should say Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions? Okay, so the following month, January, and I don't know what day this was, it just has January, and this is in the Elliott Papers, and so you can get this off of all of these documents, I believe, are available online, one way or the other, and as a matter of fact, when you pull these off of our website, every document in the footer of the document, these are Word documents. If you notice, if you go to the bottom of the page of every document, you'll actually find a link to a source where you can get it from a reliable source. And in this particular case, this is coming from the University of Chicago. And so I don't think this is on Avalon. Okay, so this is Madison has been basically asked by the Virginia legislature to please answer these responses that they were getting, because they didn't understand why these other states were making these insinuations. And basically, this is his response for the Virginia resolution's response, you know, the response they got from the other states. Does that make sense? They wanted to know, hey, how come these other states didn't go along? Why were they saying these things? They're basically refuting what you told us. So he has to go through, because he educated them on what they really needed to do. Where in Kentucky, there was just, I don't want to say this blind faith. Maybe, I don't know how many people knew that Jefferson was behind those documents or not. But it seemed like whatever he wrote that was just being sent out. They were just, boom. They were on board with, because that's what actually was sent out. So let's start off with, because he's going to kind of lay out the groundwork of what happened, you know, and so forth. And he's going to refer to a committee, and I believe that was a subcommittee, not the committee of the whole or the body of the whole. So anyway, let's go ahead. The report of the committee, because I think this is a subcommittee. Okay? Because this is a subcommittee that he worked with, that is basically, you know, they compiled these queries for Madison, you know, hey, this is what we got and blah, 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 blah. So this is his response to the subcommittee, as well as to the state of Virginia or the legislature of Virginia. Go ahead.
So do you want me to read one or two?
Both. Yeah, oh, both. Okay. One, just do one. And then I think it's pretty clear. So just go into two, too.
Okay. Report of the committee to whom were referred the communications of various state relative to the resolutions of the last General Assembly of this state concerning the alien and sedition laws. Whatever room might be found in the proceedings of some of the states who have disapproved of the resolutions of the General Assembly of this Commonwealth passed on the 21st day of December 1798, for painful remarks on the spirit and manner of those proceedings, it appears to the committee most consistent with the duty, as well as dignity, of the General Assembly to hasten an oblivion of every circumstance which might be construed into a diminution of mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members of the Union.
Yeah, so diminution is like diminishing, reducing the mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members of the Union. So in other words, it seemed like, you know, they were not very happy, and they weren't being very respectful. And bottom line, he basically points out, it appears to the committee most consistent with the duty, as well as dignity, of the General Assembly to hasten an oblivion. In other words, to basically rush into the burning building every circumstance which might be construed as a diminution of respect to the Union. In other words, when the federal government is doing things, we have this responsibility of actually going in and doing everything we can to save life, property, and everything. And obviously, the other states disagreed. So go ahead. Three.
The committee have deemed it more useful task to revise with a critical eye the resolutions which have met with their
disapprobation
to examine fully the several objects and arguments which have appeared against them, and to inquire whether there can be any errors of fact, of principle, or of reasoning which the candor of the General Assembly ought to acknowledge and correct.
So disapprobation, that's basically disapproval, to examine the fully objections. In other words, they were coming back with this disapproval, these objections and arguments that, you know, kind of flew in the face of reason of why they did this in the first place. They go, this doesn't make sense. And so bottom line is, you know, they're basically sending him these queries. Okay. And so he starts to go through the resolutions in this letter to them. This is why he starts off with the fourth point. And so the way this is written, these are not resolutions. You're looking at paragraph 1, 2, 3, and 4. Every single one of the documents that I have, like this, I actually just I highlight the text, and then I put a paragraph number to it. The reason these things have numbers is so that I can point to the paragraph number. And so when I want to cite Madison said this in paragraph 5, you can quickly go, oh, there's 5. Okay. And, oh, yeah, he did say that. The numbers are there for citation purposes. So these aren't resolutions anymore, as they laid them out first and second and third. So when you see the numbers, like technically, when you look at the Kentucky resolutions of 1799, there was really only one resolution, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And so, but when you look, you actually saw 1, 2, 3. Those are paragraph numbers, because academic citation demands that you at least identify the paragraph, you know, or page or something. And so that's why I put these in here, because it aids me in writing quickly. Boom, 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 find it in paragraph 7, 18, or what have you. And it allows me to just, you know, do the citations without spending a lot of time, because a lot of people, you know, they hate writing academically because, you know, count, you know, I got to count down. How many paragraphs is this? How many pages? Anyway, that's why you see those. So go ahead. And what he's talking about right here in the fourth paragraph is he's actually reading their resolutions that they sent out. Because he says, mm-hmm. The first of the resolutions is in the words following, quote, and if you actually go through this entire paragraph, this is the first resolution. Remember? And when mm-hmm. you read this, you go, yeah, that's actually the first resolution. So paragraph 5 is the first resolution of the Virginia resolutions, but he feels it's important to cite it here because he's going to start dissecting the resolutions in this document. That's how powerful this all is, because he's actually teaching those who he'd already taught further what these said and what they were doing. You got to remember, actually, I don't know if the legislature, even though they have an election in 1800, in 1798, they may have had a election turnover. Does that make sense? You have a 2-year election cycle of representatives. Mm-hmm. So there may be some people on the committee that may not have been there when Madison taught them. Don't know, but anyway, he still does the full due diligence in saying, this is what it said, and this is what was meant. So go ahead and read 5 now.
Okay. Resolved, the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former.
Okay, so then he explains kind of what that basically says. Actually, he's responding to that regarding the sentiments and so forth, because this is kind of, again, he's helping them understand what they said, why they said this, and defending what they said regarding these other states' insinuations or candid comments and so forth. So go ahead.
No unfavorable comment can have been made on the sentiments here expressed. To maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and of their own state against every aggression, both foreign and domestic, and to support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by their Constitution are duties which the General Assembly ought always to feel, and to which on such an occasion, it was evidently proper to express their sincere and firm adherence.
Okay, so then he goes into their next resolution, right? That's exactly what he says. So 7, paragraph 7, in their next resolution, so go ahead and read paragraph 8.
And the General Assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the Union of the States, to maintain which it pledges all its powers, and that for this end, it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and the public happiness.
Okay, so what we have is the, I want to highlight this, oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union. In other words, every infraction of the Constitution must be opposed. Cannot say that more clearer. Okay, so go ahead and read the next one, 9.
Okay. The observation just made is equally applicable to this solemn declaration of warm attachment to the Union and this solemn pledge to maintain it, nor can any question arise among enlightened friends of the Union as to the duty of watching over and opposing every infraction of those principles which constitute its basis, and a faithful observance of which can alone secure its existence and the public happiness thereon depending.
There you go. So he's really repeating in more plain language, because you got to remember, when they're writing, believe it or not, they're trying to be very concise and succinct. They're not trying to write a book. They're not trying to, you know, make this a children's novel. They're really just trying to say, this is unconstitutional. Now he's actually taking that one little line, oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the basis of the Union, and expounded it as to the duty of watching over and opposing every infraction of those principles which constitutes its basis, and a faithful observance of which can alone secure its existence. So, I mean, he's just expounding on this, but he's not backing down. You see any backing down?
Mm-mm. Okay. Just repeating himself.
Absolutely. So the third resolution, again, so this is the 10th paragraph. I'll read the line. The third resolution is in the following words. And there's, again, this is a quotation. This entire paragraph is a repeating of the third resolution from Virginia. Go ahead.
Okay. That this assembly doth explicitly peremptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them.
Okay, so now he's read it, he's cited it. You know, it's interesting. He's writing this, right? This is all being written by hand. They didn't have a computer. He didn't cut and paste. So he had to sit down and basically verbatim rewrite this into this document. And now he's going to dissect this. I mean, it takes a pretty patient person. If you look at his tone and what he says here, you don't see any idiot. He's not using that kind of language, right? So he's actually being very patient in trying to help them understand this. So go ahead and read the next paragraph as he begins to dissect this over the next few paragraphs. Go ahead.
On this resolution, the committee have bestowed all the attention which its importance merits. They have scanned it not merely with a strict, but with a severe eye, and they feel confidence in pronouncing that in its just and fair construction, it is unexceptionably true in its several positions, as well as constitutional and conclusive in its inferences.
Okay, so he's basically saying that they clearly reviewed this and with the strictest of confidence and scrutiny, and clearly have come away with this conclusion that they were correct on this. So the next one, he's still talking about the same resolution 3. Go ahead, the next paragraph.
The resolution declares, first, that if it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, in other words, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution, and that the Constitution is a compact to which the states are parties.
Okay, so is there any confusion what he just said in clarifying that one line? Because he uses the citation again. Now he's reciting the resolution 3, just a small part of it. quote, it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, close quote. In other words, now he's basically saying, now I'm going to try to say this differently, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution and that the Constitution is a compact to which the states are parties. How can he say it any more simpler? He's basically, I mean, when somebody reads that, they go, well, what the heck does that mean? You know, it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties. Well, yeah. You know, maybe that's
they
a little.
They could say that.
Okay, so in other words, yeah, he's literally clarifying what that line meant. And it took a little bit more, but bottom line, he's actually even included the powers. But go ahead as the next paragraph, because this is where he expounds a lot.
Clear as the position must seem that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution and from that alone, the committee are not unapprised of the late doctrine which opens another source of federal powers, not less extensive and important than it's new and unexpected.
Okay, so...
And it is new and unexpected.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's basically saying that it is a clear position that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution. And from that alone. So the committee is not unapprised. In other words, the committee should not be surprised of the late doctrine, which opens another source of federal powers, not less extensive and important than it is new and unexpected. In other words, okay, so we're not surprised that there's this new power. And he goes into this, the examination of this doctrine. Go ahead.
The examination of this doctrine will be most conveniently connected with the review of a succeeding resolution.
Okay, go ahead.
The committee satisfy themselves here with briefly remarking that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it.
Okay, so hold on right there. What did you just say? Well, you heard me. I didn't mispronounce it. I wasn't speaking in a foreign language. I understand that. Yeah. So let me just say this. He actually cites the ratification debates here. And nobody gets this. Because what does he say here? The committee satisfies themselves here with briefly remarking that in the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, in other words, he's talking about the debates. And as they were discussing the Constitution and what it meant during the Virginia ratification debates, it was constantly justified and recommended for ratification on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. Okay, can that be any clearer? So in other words, the states ratified the Constitution on that basic principle. And so therefore, this is a hard set in stone. They cannot exercise powers not granted. Okay, so go ahead with his next.
Okay, and that if any doubt could have existed on this subject under the original text of the Constitution, it is removed as far as words could remove it by the 12th Amendment.
Okay, stop right there. So he basically says, if there's any doubt that the federal government cannot exercise powers not granted, as we justified the Constitution and the sole basis that it was ratified, because remember, how many amendments were added to the Constitution when they were ratifying it? None, right? The amendments came well after the federal government was formed, and then the Bill of Rights came out. And then he cites, interestingly enough, the 12th Amendment. Because the 12th Amendment was the 12th Amendment in all 12 of the Bill of Rights. When we went through it, we saw those as the articles, right? 1, 2, 12. And the 12th Amendment today is called the 10th Amendment. We do not call it the 12th, but clearly he is calling it now. Because when you read this, he literally he quotes it. And when you look, well, where's that quote in the amendments of the Bill of Rights? Oh, shoot, that is the 10th Amendment. Why did he call it the 12th? because there were 12 amendments in the Bill of Rights, and there were still two of those amendments, actually technically one at this point in time, because Connecticut had ratified the First Amendment. But the point is this, is that out of the 12 amendments, you know, the 10th actually was ratified. It had a join to it. So go ahead and read this then. Keep going.
Okay. Now a part of the Constitution, so by the 12th Amendment, now a part of the Constitution, which expressly declares that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
There you go. So in other words, they ratified this, and it was clearly justified that the federal government could not do anything that was not enumerated in that Constitution. Then they even amended it to actually say that in the Constitution, because they felt that what was sold to the states wasn't plain enough, because even though the states ratified it to go, yeah, we understand that these are the only powers that they have. We understand that there are no general powers here. We would still like to see a phrase or an amendment to ensure that it cannot be construed, that they can assume any powers that they want. And then the 10th Amendment was added. So he's now pointing out that it was ratified with this understanding, and it was so important that we even added an amendment to this. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So keep going.
Okay.
Now, actually, hold on here. Let me just say this. We've got 2 minutes left. So we're going to kind of set up this, and he's actually going to be talking more in dissecting into these details and so forth. But he actually gets into some theoretical stuff. And so you're going to notice that he's talking about governments and societies and so forth, and he provides what states mean, because he says that the states are the parties to the compact. And he actually wants to dissect the word states. What do states mean? You know, and what did it mean in this context? And so he goes through, this is where most people get lost when they read this, because it's just not really good plain English the way we talk today, where, you know, we have to kind of hold people's hands and say, now let's define what states mean and how we were using it in context here. That's the way he says this. Now, remind me to bring this up the next time, you know, we cover this tomorrow, because this is important. We need to kind of highlight what he said before, and now he's dissecting just the word states. What does that mean? So, with that, any comments or any feedback? You got a half a minute here, so. You love this, don't you?
I mean, no, he just says it over and over and over.
Yes.
He keeps reiterating it, so we get it.
Okay, but do you like going through the Constitution and these documents like this? This helps, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, great. So this is kind of like, and I kind of allude to, this is almost like having a scripture study group, where, you know, a group of people get down and they read the scriptures and go, wow, what about this? You know, this is how you learn. This is how we expand our brain on understanding these types of things. So anyway, with that, we will be back tomorrow, and we will actually try to give you a precursor of paragraph 14 as we lead into 15, as he dives in and defines the state. So that way we don't just trip over you on explaining this. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.